All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're diving into, well, I guess you could say the deep end of Florida law. We're tackling a case pretty foundational, really, for anyone who's studying law in the Sunshine State.
Oh, absolutely. A real cornerstone.
Exactly. And that case is Pomponio v. Claridge of Pompano Condominium, Inc.
Ah, Pomponio, a classic.
You'll find this one. This Florida Supreme Court decision, it's dated November 15th, 1979, and there was a rehearing denied in January of 1980. So what makes this case, I guess, so crucial for our listeners? It really throws us right into this conflict that, we see pop up quite a bit between a state's power to legislate and then, well, the Constitution, right? The constitutional protection of existing contracts. And this one specifically deals with, I guess you could call them those sometimes pesky rent deposits that are tied to those condo recreational leases that are so common in Florida.
Yeah, those 99-year leases, right? Always a fun time.
Exactly. So maybe you could break down the central question that Pomponio is really grappling with. What's at the heart of this case?
Sure. So at its core, Pomponio is asking a very fundamental question about the limits of state power. Can Florida pass a law that forces rent payments to be made directly to the court while there's a lawsuit going on about the lease, even if that lease was signed before this law even existed?
Oh, I see where this is going. Retroactive application.
Bingo. And that's where things get a little sticky, constitutionally speaking, because that kind of retroactive application immediately raises concerns under, well, both actually, the contract clauses of both the Florida and the U.S. Constitution.
Right, of course. It's like changing the rules of the game after it's already started.
Precisely. And for our listeners out there, especially those future legal eagles, understanding how this tension between state power and contract rights gets resolved is absolutely key. And Pomponio provides, I'd say, like a prime example, a really clear illustration of this very principle in action.
Definitely. So let's lay out who's who in this legal drama. We have Arthur R. Pomponio and his fellow lessors, the developers in this case, right? They're facing off against Claridge of Pompano Condominium, Inc., who are representing, well, the condo owners themselves. It's like a classic showdown, between those who have a vested interest in the existing contract and then, well, the state stepping in with its regulatory power.
Yeah, real clash of titans.
So what we're aiming to do today is, really dissect this landmark ruling, this Pomponio decision. We need to understand for our listeners the specifics of this legal framework, the balancing test that the Florida Supreme Court ultimately established, and maybe even more important, what this whole case tells us about those lasting limits on, well, when exactly the Florida legislature can step in and retroactively change agreements that are already in place. So let's rewind a bit. Where did this whole legal battle begin? What triggered this Pomponio showdown in the first place?
Okay, so the origin story, so to speak, starts with a lawsuit. The Claridge of Pompano Condominium Association, they're acting on behalf of the condo owners.
Right.
They file suit against the developers and lessors of the property. Now, the target here is a pretty common feature you'd find in a lot of Florida condos, especially back then. We're talking about a long-term, we're talking often like 99-year recreational lease
Yeah.
that's attached to the condo property itself.
Oh, yeah, those leases covering all the shared amenities, the pool, the clubhouse, all that good stuff.
Exactly. Think of all the fun in the sun.
Right.
So the legal spark, the thing that really sets this whole thing off, is Florida Statute 718.4014, passed back in 1977. Now, what this law did was it stipulated that if there was a lawsuit specifically challenging the obligations of, one of these recreational leases, well, the lessees, and that's the condo association, and the unit owners, they had to deposit their rent payments, those monthly checks, directly with the court while the litigation was ongoing.
So instead of the money going straight to the lessors, it's basically being held by the court, like an escrow.
Exactly. A forced savings account, you might say.
So I'm guessing Mr. Pomponio and the other lessors were not thrilled about this new arrangement. What was their, I guess, main legal argument against this?
Well, their core argument was that applying this 1977 law, right, to a lease that was already in effect before 1977, well, they saw this as a fundamental violation of their rights, specifically their constitutionally protected right to receive that rent money as they had originally agreed to in the contract. They entered into this agreement under one set of rules, one legal landscape, and now the state is coming in and retroactively changing those rules. And, well, they felt it was to their detriment.
Right, I can see how they'd feel that way. So this idea of retroactivity, that seems to be the crux of the issue here. This lease predates the law, and that's what's causing these constitutional concerns. Why exactly does that trigger such, I guess, you know, huge concerns, especially when we're talking about the sanctity of contracts?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. That retroactive application is the key point. When two parties come together and form a contract, they're doing so within the existing legal framework. It's like, you know, the rules of the road. But if a state can just come along later and pass a law that reaches back in time to fundamentally change the terms of that agreement, well, it just throws everything into chaos. You know, it injects this huge amount of instability into the system and undermines the whole foundation of contract law.
Like a rug being pulled out from under you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's precisely what the contract clause is designed to prevent. It's a safeguard, really, against the government overreaching and unfairly rewriting the rules of private deals after they've already been made.
So in this specific instance, did the lower court initially side with the condo owners and uphold this rent deposit statute?
They did. The trial court initially sided with the condo owners and enforced the statute, which, of course, led the listeners to take their fight up the legal ladder. They appealed, and that's how this case landed in the lap of the Florida Supreme Court.
Got it. So we have a clash. A state law seemingly focused on consumer protection, right?
Right.
Bumping heads with the lessors' claim that this law is unconstitutionally messing with their pre-existing contract. And this is where the contract clause itself, you know, takes center stage. Could you break down what exactly the contract clause says and how the Florida Supreme Court interpreted its role in this case?
Absolutely. So the contract clause, you can find it in Article 1, Section 10 of both the U.S. Constitution and the Florida Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
It essentially says that states can't pass laws that impair the obligation of contracts. Sounds pretty straightforward, right?
Right.
But here's the catch, and it's a big one. The prohibition isn't absolute.
Mm.
States have this thing called police power, which is essentially their inherent authority to pass laws that protect, you know, the health, safety, and general welfare of their citizens.
Like keeping the peace, making sure things run smoothly, that sort of thing.
Exactly. And sometimes those police powers, they can bump up against existing contractual agreements. So the courts, they had to develop a way to figure out, well, when exactly does a state's regulatory action go too far? When does it cross the line and actually violate the contract clause by unfairly impairing a contract?
And that brings us to Pomponio, right? That's where Florida drew its line in the sand, so to speak.
You got it. Pomponio is the case where the Florida Supreme Court laid out its framework, its specific test, for determining whether a law has unconstitutionally impaired a contract. And it's this three-part balancing test that's become, well, pretty famous, I'd say, in Florida legal circles.
A three-part test. Okay, let's break that down. What's the first question the court considers?
Right, so the first prong of the test asks, did this law, this statute, did it substantially impair the contractual rights of one of the parties involved? And in Pomponio, the court said, yep, it did. They reasoned that forcing the lessons to deposit the rent with the court meant they lost access to that money, potentially for a very long time, while this lawsuit dragged on.
Ah, so it's not just a theoretical impairment. It's a real, tangible loss.
Precisely. And the court even pointed to the fact that inflation, you know, the rising cost of living, could actually eat away at the value of those funds while they're just sitting there in the court registry. That's a real economic deprivation that wasn't part of the original deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lease didn't say, oh, and by the way, if there's a lawsuit, you might not see your rent money for who knows how long, and it might be worth less when you finally get it back.
Wow, so that's a pretty clear yes on the substantial impairment part of the test. What's the second prong, the second question the court considers?
Okay, so the second prong asks, does the law serve a significant and legitimate public purpose? Now, this is where Pomponio gets really interesting, I think. The majority of the justices on the Florida Supreme Court, they weren't actually convinced that the public purpose being put forward in this case, which was, you know, broadly described as consumer protection, was actually significant enough to justify retroactively messing with the lessor's contractual rights. They essentially said, look, we get that you're trying to protect condo owners, but that justification alone isn't strong enough in this specific situation to warrant changing the rules on a contract that already existed.
It's like they're saying, we need a better reason than that.
Exactly. And this is actually a really important point that highlights a key difference between, you know, how Florida approaches contract law and how the federal courts might approach it. You always, always, always have to consider the state-specific jurisprudence, the way the courts in that particular state have interpreted the law.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all situation.
Mm-hmm.
What flies in federal court might not fly in Florida. Okay, so we've got substantial impairment. We've got a shaky public purpose justification. What's the third and, I guess, final piece of this balancing test?
The third prong is all about means and ends. It asks, okay, even if there is a legitimate public purpose, was the method chosen by the state, the way they went about trying to achieve this purpose, was it reasonable and necessary? Or was there maybe a less drastic way, a less intrusive way to accomplish the same goal without causing so much disruption to existing contractual agreements?
So it's like they're looking for the path of least resistance.
You could say that. And in Pomponio, the court concluded that, yeah, there were definitely less drastic options available. Chief Justice England, who wrote the majority opinion, he specifically pointed to some of those least restrictive means, like requiring the rent to be held in an escrow account, but one that actually earns interest for the lessors.
Ah, so they're still protected, but their money isn't just sitting there losing value.
Exactly. The fact that the Florida legislature didn't even consider these kinds of less intrusive alternatives, well, that weighed heavily against them when the court was deciding whether to uphold this law retroactively.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get the big picture here. The Florida Supreme Court is essentially saying that if you want to retroactively change a contract, you better have a darn good reason, and you better have explored all other options first.
That's a great summary. And keep in mind, it's not just about the principle of the thing. It's about the real-world impact on the parties involved. You know, from the lessor's perspective, not only are they not getting the income they bargained for, but the value of that money could actually be shrinking over time while it's tied up in court. That's the economic deprivation the court is really concerned about.
Makes sense. So it seems like the court had a pretty clear and unified opinion on this, right? Or were there any dissenting voices?
Well, not entirely unified. While they all ultimately agreed that the law was unconstitutional in this specific case, there were some nuances in their reasoning. Justice Overton, for example, he agreed with the majority, but he offered a slightly different perspective in his concurring opinion. He zeroed in on the due process implications for the lessors.
Due process, meaning the right to fair treatment under the law.
Exactly. Justice Overton argued that by depriving the lessors of the interest they would have earned on their rent money if it had been paid directly to them, well, that constituted an additional layer of unfair financial harm. He saw it as a separate but related constitutional problem with this law.
So he's adding another layer of concern on top of the contract clause violation.
Exactly. And then we have Justice Alderman, who actually dissented from the majority opinion. He disagreed with the finding that the law was unconstitutional. Now, we don't have the full details of his reasoning laid out in the materials we have, but we can make some educated guesses about his position.
Let's speculate. What might he have argued?
It's possible that he placed more emphasis on the state's police power in this particular context. Maybe he saw the protection of condo owners as a more compelling public purpose than the majority did, a purpose that justified the retroactive impact on these leases. Or maybe he disagreed with the majority's assessment of how substantially the lessors were actually harmed by the law.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps he thought there weren't any truly less restrictive means available.
So even without knowing his exact reasoning, his dissent shows us that there's room for debate on these issues. It's not always black and white.
Exactly. There's often nuance and complexity when you're trying to balance these competing interests, you know, state power versus individual rights.
So zooming out a bit, why is this Pomponio case still so relevant today? Why should law students, especially in Florida, really dig into this case?
Well, Pomponio remains a landmark case for a very important reason. It firmly established that three-part balancing test that Florida courts use to decide contract clause challenges. And here's the thing, the contract clause, it exists in both the federal and state constitutions, right?
Right.
But what the Florida Supreme Court did in Pomponio, they essentially asserted their independence. They said, look, we're going to interpret our own state's contract clause, and our interpretation might not always line up perfectly with how the federal courts interpret it.
So Florida's doing its own thing, in a sense.
Exactly. And that's why Pomponio is so crucial for anyone practicing law in Florida or for anyone studying law here. It gives you the specific framework, the test, that the Florida courts will apply in these situations.
So if I'm a lawyer in Florida and I'm dealing with a situation where a new law is affecting an existing contract, what are the key questions I need to ask based on Pomponio?
First and foremost, you need to ask, was this contract already in place before this new law was passed? If so, how significantly does the new law actually change the original agreement? What is the state's justification for making this change? And is it compelling enough to warrant a retroactive application? And crucially, are there any less restrictive ways the state could have achieved its goal without messing with this existing contract?
Okay, so it's not just about whether the law is good or bad, it's about how it interacts with existing agreements and whether there were better ways to achieve the same goal.
Exactly. Pomponio sets a pretty high bar for the state when it comes to retroactively changing the rules on contracts.
So it's a case with lasting implications, even beyond those 99-year recreational leases.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that in Florida, those pre-existing contractual rights have strong protection under the state constitution.
Well, this has been an incredibly insightful deep dive into Pomponio v. Claridge of Pompano Condominium, Inc. It's a case that, you know, continues to shape how we understand the balance of power between the state and those private agreements that are, you know, the bedrock of our economy.
I couldn't agree more. Pomponio serves as a, I'd say, powerful reminder of the limits on a state's ability to just come in and alter contractual obligations that already exist, especially retroactively. And that balancing test it established, it demands a thorough examination of the situation, a real consideration of the impact on the parties involved, and a thoughtful exploration of alternatives.
Definitely. It's not just about achieving a policy goal. It's about doing so in a way that respects those existing rights and obligations. And on that note, here's a final thought. I guess you could call it a challenge for our listeners, especially those aspiring legal minds out there. Think about how those principles that are articulated in Pomponio, a case that's centered on, you know, these real estate leases, think about how they might apply to legislative efforts today that are impacting contracts in completely different fields. Rapidly evolving sectors like technology or digital services.
Oh, that's a good one.
What would constitute, for example, a significant economic deprivation in those contexts? It's something to ponder as you continue your legal studies and maybe even as you move into your legal careers. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Pomponio.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.
See you then.